news and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks so much for being here. Yesterday, the Fed making statements about not raising interest rates, but not lowering interest rates. And there's a lot of things happening in the U.S. economy, and we want to know what it means, what the evidence, what the data means, kind of unfiltered and an observation from an expert. We turn to Kristen Benz from KB Advisory Group. Kristen, I'm glad you're back.
I'm so happy to be here, Mike.
This is, here's what I do. You always are able to deliver not so good news with a smile on your face. You're better at that than I am. But I want to ask a couple of questions because you've sent me a couple of things. I want to start with Yum Brands. And this is a major, fast food brand. But Yum Brands didn't meet their estimates on revenue. Talk about what you see happening in the industry for where working class people go to eat.
Okay, so Yum Brands, for those that don't follow the market, that's Taco Bell, that's Pizza Hut, and that's KFC. So that used to be kind of, low-income consumers where they're going to, feed their family. If you're a teen, you're probably door dashing. my kids love to do that, too. So this kind of begs the question, when you have a mass fast food company missing their earnings, it begs the question on how the consumer is doing. And so, Mike, you and I talk all the time about this bifurcated market, this bifurcated consumer, the haves and the have-nots, and the middle class is kind of like cut out of it. That's what's happening now. And so we've been talking about this for a long time, but now this recent, spout of earnings that we had this week really caught a lot of my colleagues off guard, which I think is hilarious because you and I've been talking about the consumer being under pressure for so long. So when you look at Taco Bell's value menu and they can't sell that,
right,
something's wrong. So the cracks are beginning to show, which I've seen for a long time. And then we should talk about Starbucks, too.
Yeah. And before we move on to Starbucks, I want to ask this question because I want to ask if there's a similarity here. When we were talking about where people were shopping for items, you talked about Target and Walmart, and then they were going to the dollar stores. And then from the dollar stores, they were disappearing, which is showing, really where people are hurting so much. Isn't it the same thing here that working families, they're going to lean on Pizza Hut and KFC and Taco Bell when times are tough? Those are usually the places you go in order to make ends meet. And in this case, if they're not meeting earnings, does that mean they're not even going there?
Well, that's the thing. So, and those of you that are listening, if whether or not you have kids, if you're just trying to hit the drive-thru before you go home from work at night, it's expensive.
It is.
So now, we had record inflation in food pricing and groceries, right? But I DoorDashed for my kids the other day, Taco Bell, because I relented, and I think it was $50. What are you doing?
Wow.
So people are like, they're teenagers, obviously, but, everyone's feeling that. And so I would have rather spent $50 on groceries and fed them at home, which is what we're doing now.
You go back in time a short distance. If you spent $50 at Taco Bell, you were headed to the ER.
Yes.
That used to be a lot of food.
You were feeding 20 people in your fraternity house.
Yes. So update me now on Starbucks. What's going on with Starbucks?
Okay. So this was, and it's not funny, but that I find all of these economists and cohorts of mine on the air. They're like, oh my gosh, we can't believe that Starbucks didn't meet their numbers. Well, of course they didn't, because people are spending $10 for a coffee. Are you kidding? So it's hitting everyone. So you have Taco Bell on the low end, Pizza Hut, KFC, they're feeling it. Starbucks used to be kind of a bougie thing. Got the cup and I rolled in and I'm paying, $10 for a coffee that's really awful. And, now they miss their numbers too, and they're noting consumer weakness. So the consumer, so if you start pulling back on that $10 coffee every morning, something's happening in the market. And it was hilarious watching, these economists saying, oh, wow, that really surprised me. Didn't surprise me. So this goes back to consumer credit, Mike.
Yeah.
And people are drowning with interest rates and they're putting gas, utilities, and food on their credit card. So then, those should be used for Taylor Swift tickets or Beyonce tickets or going to Disney World, right? That's what credit cards used to be for. to space things out, to plan things out. Now they're used for daily living and daily expenses. And, you know, who are these people going to vote for in November? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, and that's a big part of this as well. Kristen Bentz is joining us. She is the CEO of KB Advisory Group, a guest host here, a fill-in host at KTAR News. You've heard her on this show and others as well. I want to ask about Jerome Powell talking and about what the Fed is doing and saying. He was asked about stagflation, and he said he doesn't necessarily see the stag or the flation and kind of defended the direction of the economy. But there are other experts that are talking about we're in a big time of very slow growth and high inflation, and that is the definition of stagflation. What do you see happening between now and the end of the year?
Well, it absolutely is the definition of stagflation, and Jerome Powell is going to do what Jerome Powell is going to do, right? And, you know, there's a rule on Wall Street, don't fight the tape and don't fight the Fed. So those of you at home that are trying to invest in the market or day trading, there's no catalyst right now. There's no catalyst other than the Fed. So what am I seeing? I don't think you're going to see any rate cuts coming anytime soon because inflation is creeping up. And in the Valley, if you guys are in your cars right now, you notice that gas is back up above $4. So it's not going to get better this summer. So unless we have some sort of black swan event, I really don't see the Fed cutting rates. They will try to appeal to the administration and to this election, but they really can't cut because the metrics aren't there. So, I mean, I could see them maybe cutting in December. All my intel is telling me maybe December, but I don't think you're going to see any cuts or any relief anytime soon. So we have a joke on Wall Street, higher for longer. Everything's going to be higher for longer.
Okay. When you look at, you know, month over month, we saw what happened in the month of March. In April, we were told, and it looked like the growth had kind of gone to a halt, like 1.6%. Inflation was, what, 3.5% year over year for that month. What are your expectations for the when we see April in this month, when the numbers come out? Do you expect that to extend? Do you think that what you saw last month was an anomaly? What do you think?
Well, you know, all of these jobs that people are talking about, those are all part-time jobs. So what that is consistently telling me, and you and I talked about this, gosh, 6 months ago, Mike, everyone has a side hustle, right? So to make ends meet, most Americans need to have two or even three jobs just to survive. So I don't see that changing anytime soon. And again, back to Jerome Powell, he's basically trying to retrofit Fed policy to the market. And he keeps trying. So there's a huge disconnect out there between the stock market and Main Street. And unfortunately, I think you're just going to, we're going to be in this struggling kind of upper level low for quite a while until there's some catalyst that changes it. You know, they're saying that the labor market is tight. I have many friends in the tech industry that are struggling right now. That's a sector that's been particularly hard hit. And then your upper earners, they're the ones that are really being stressed right now. White collar workers are the ones that are getting laid off. So really, the only growth that you're seeing is, honestly, immigrant workers and part-time workers. And is that a strong economy? No.
But aren't we seeing a bit of an anomaly? Arizona seems to be very strong. They added like 5,000 or 8,000 construction jobs in Mesa last year. We keep hearing and keep seeing the cranes going up here. Are we a bit of an anomaly? Are we insulated here in Arizona?
Well, I always think Arizona is a bit of an anomaly. We're always the last to go into a recession, and we're always the last to come out. Because, you know, we do rely a lot on the service industry and destination management and that sort of thing. But that's changing now with all the semiconductors and tech that's coming to the Valley, thankfully. And there are cranes going up. And I think the Arizona economy is thriving. Absolutely thriving. And I think that's something, you know, if you're driving past Desert Ridge, you're driving past any of these restaurants, they're all packed.
Yeah.
So I get that a lot when I'm talking to my clients. And this is a funny thing that I get often, like, oh, well, you know, my wife drove past the Target and the parking lot was packed.
Yeah.
That's really not an economic indicator because you don't know what they're there for. And we also have, you know, non-store shopping, which is a huge portion of retail sales, right? Because that's how people live and work now. But I believe that the Arizona economy in particular is an anomaly and it is thriving. And that's just one of the great reasons, you know, why we all live here. Because we're kind of a 24/7 economy now. We're not just, you know, a place where you go when it's cold.
Well, listen, I always appreciate the update and the information and the clarification, and I know you'll be back soon, and I know you'll be in when I'm gone next week, so I appreciate it.
I will. I will mind the store while you're gone.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, that's Kristen Benz, KB Advisory Group. Coming up in a moment, the formation of a civilian review board in Phoenix and what it means. We'll get to that in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, the 2024 Go Red for Women Luncheon takes place May 3rd. JW Marriott Scottsdale Camelback Inn Resort and Spa. Join us as we go red for women. Visit heart.org/PHXGoRed to learn more and register. There was a creation. The Phoenix City Council narrowly passed an ordinance to establish a civilian-led board. In a contentious 6-3 vote, the council approved creating a civilian board with the amendment that residents who have filed legal claims against the Phoenix Police Department won't be eligible to serve on the board. In other words, if you've sued the cops, you can't be on the board that looks into how cops police themselves. Well, you might be biased. You know, this is what's funny. So let me explain. Councilwoman Keisha Hodge Washington took issue with the amendment. I'm sorry, Keisha. Thanks, Julia. Washington took issue with the amendment because it's a broad language and it potentially excludes important perspectives for the board. Let me explain why that, to me, is a little bit odd. Because when the OAT, the Office of Accountability and Transparency, was created, that office specifically said you could never have worked in law enforcement or been an immediate family member of someone that worked in law enforcement and worked for that office. Why? They were concerned about bias. So when the opposite is happening, now you say if you've sued the police, you can't be a part of this board. That's bias. That's too broad. And it takes away a perspective. But it also, my problem is, and I think I know the pendulum is swinging. A few years ago, these things were no-brainers. If there was something, and I am all in favor of oversight. I think every organization, every department of government, whether it's the federal government and the military, the Pentagon, should have oversight. There's no doubt about that. They need to rein in spending. They need to watch how they spend. They need to pass audits. They need to behave correctly. We understand that within the military, there is the military police, and within the military police, there are investigations into behaviors by troops in combat situations. All of that is necessary. I'm not saying it isn't. But the insinuation that the police, when investigating other cops, it's like saying when you have, when was the last time that you saw a story of a teacher abusing a student? That anyone accused the principal or the school board of covering up for that teacher? Now, there have been story after story after story of people being fired from school organizations for inappropriate behavior and then getting a job in another district. But nobody says there's a systemic problem here and we need outside people to look at this. My point is, why is there this unique look at law enforcement as if somehow you're automatically dirty? And these are the people that have taken a job that on a daily basis, they defend the rights of everyone. And then somehow, whether it's when they went into the police department or after they've been on for a while, they become criminals themselves and are covering up crimes within their ranks. That's the problem I have with this perception. The number of false claims against police officers is immense, whether it's troopers, deputies. That doesn't mean that there's some aren't legit. Every one of them is looked into. But when it's deemed to be a false claim, automatically people assume part of it might be a cover up. There was a situation with an officer involved shooting where a former city council member, it wasn't even in his district. He went out on the street and started screaming that there was no gun. Nobody saw a gun. This was a bad shoot by the cops. And within a couple of days, a video came out that showed that there was a gun. that the perpetrator had a gun and he was told over and over and over and over again to drop the gun and not raise the gun. And it wasn't until he raised the gun that he was shot by the police. Did you ever get an apology from the council member? Did anybody go and retract that story? Did anybody make it headlines to say that this person was wrong? The insinuations are not the right insinuations. They're just not the right insinuations. All right, coming up in a moment, we are going to speak with the Senate President Warren Peterson. Yesterday, the Arizona State Senate overturned or voted to overturn the abortion law in Arizona. It goes to the governor's desk today. We'll talk about what happens next in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Last week, the Arizona House of Representatives, with two Republicans siding with the Democrat caucus in the House, overturned the abortion ruling, the abortion law in Arizona. And yesterday, the Senate did the same thing with two senators, Republican Senators Shauna Bolick and TJ Shope, siding with the Democrats. And so now this goes to the governor's desk, and the governor is expected to sign it early this afternoon. To talk about that vote and what happens next is Senate President Warren Peterson. Welcome back to the show. I appreciate you doing this morning.
Sure. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
First, let's talk about the vote. Obviously, I wasn't there. We had reporters there, and I had talked to some other people that were there. This was a passionate debate and people explaining their vote before they made them. Senator Bolick did. I know Senator Wadsack. I know that Senator Hoffman and others were talking about this. Can you talk about any discussion that you're willing to about before the vote and how it led to this? And then we'll talk about what happened after.
Yeah, well, I think this has been really an obsession by the media and this issue, and there's just been a fever pitch on it. And I think you saw Democrats feel like they had an opportunity at this, and you know, you ended up with a situation where, you know, you have what's called a roll, where leadership gets rolled on something. It's rare. Only happened three times in the 13 years I've been down at the Capitol, and you know, that's kind of what led to all of this.
Were there conversations with the senators, the Republican senators that voted yes? Was there any attempt to get them to not vote that direction? Was there any chance that that was going to happen? Were you surprised that those two senators voted the way they did?
You know, I initially was surprised, and this was a while ago. And you know, I heard about it. There of course is tons of pressure for them, you know, not to vote and not to do what they were going to do. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those very negative, acrimonious situations that, you know, you don't want to look to. But I really, you know, Mike, what I really wanted to come on to say was that the next step is that we're going to do, you know, we're going to focus on what matters to Arizonans, which is inflation and the border. When I'm on the campaign trail, I don't have one person asking me about abortion or talking to me about abortion. They are all asking me about inflation and the border. I really feel like this issue was completely blown up because, again, this was like an obsession by the media, and it's one of the only things that the Democrats are convinced this is an issue where they're winning on. But the fact is, the reason why Republican states are growing in population and Democrat states are shrinking in population is because Republicans do good policy. Our policy, we're in touch with our constituents. And right now my constituents are talking to me about inflation and the border. And next week we're going to have a border day, and we're going to be sending a border bill to the ballot because the governor has vetoed all of our border legislation.
Yeah, I have that in front of me, and I want to get to it. It's the strike everything to HCR 2060, and I want to get to that and what'll be on the ballot. But I want to just finish the thought on what's happening with the abortion ruling, because I think people are confused about what's going to happen next. And then in November, there is still that referendum that'll be on the ballot,
the access ballot.
Yeah, sure. But also
as far as process goes, yeah, I'm happy to talk about about that. I mean, as far as process goes, it passed. You know, the governor's going to sign it, which means that the 15-week law will be the law of Arizona. So it's the abortion is, you know, up to 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. Now, this fall, the Democrats are putting on, there's an initiative that'll go on that will basically allow abortion up until birth, because there's big exceptions in there. They'll try to say it's not that, but it'll allow abortion up to birth. And so obviously that is insane and extreme. That's out of touch with the voters. If people get educated on that, I believe that that will fail.
Do you think that the Republicans in the legislature will get a referendum on the ballot that will counter that, that will put restrictions that will give them an option other than that?
You know, that's something that I prefer. I would like to put, you know, life options on the ballot. It's been hard to get a consensus. We have to get 47 people to agree on something. So far, we have had discussions on putting something on the ballot, but so far we haven't found something that we can get 47 people to agree on. There is a number of people that don't want to do anything as far as going beyond conception. And so if you just have one person that's there, then nothing's going to happen with that.
Senate President Warren Peterson is joining us. So then what would that look like in your mind? What are you trying to get on the ballot that people are either for or not necessarily in favor of because it's not conception? Are there any parameters that are being discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I think one scenario is, of course, there's gaping holes. You know, we've passed a lot of laws that are good for protecting mothers, and also just making sure people are informed and knowing what they're doing. You know, Senator Mesnard played the heartbeat of his baby on the floor yesterday. It's very touching, but that's something, a law that says, you know, make sure that women understand, these young girls understand what's happening. Give them a chance to listen to heartbeat, making sure that if this happens, that it's done by somebody who's very skilled or certain doctors, or making sure that they can't profit from this, make it a non-profitable industry. A lot of this is profit motive, saying you can't sell baby parts. So there's ideas like that, that's being discussed. But we'll see. We're working on that consensus. We've had several meetings on it, but so far we haven't been able to have a consensus on it.
All right. So before I let you go, during the commercial break, before you came on, I received a press release from the Arizona State Senate about HCR 2060, which is a strike everything called the Secure the Border Act that is going to be on the ballot in November. Can you explain what this is and what the voter's choice will be if this passes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this really is the top issue, right? Like, again, the abortion issue has been obsessed over and just played by the media, but they're totally out of touch. The real issue is public safety. It's jobs. It's the economy. It's inflation, education, you know, making sure their kids have quality education. That's what all of my voters are talking to me about. So this will include, basically, it'll, you know, we're looking at the law that Texas has that says if you've, you know, you can be arrested and deported by state officials if you are here unlawfully, if you are found to have come into the country unlawfully, illegally. But it's also looking at making sure that we address, you know, the fentanyl. I mean, the open border is really what's causing the fentanyl crisis. There's a direct link there. And so we're also looking at really stiff penalties with fentanyl, putting in a felony murder provision for people who sell fentanyl. This stuff is so deadly. It's poison. It's killing people. It can touch your skin and kill you. And so allowing the voters to have an opportunity to really crack down on fentanyl.
I'm looking forward to that. I think the voters in Arizona, I think it's an option for them that they're going to be able to decide whether or not, and of course, contingent on what the Supreme Court does with SB4 in Texas. But I think it's reasonable to be on the ballot. I appreciate the time today and the clarification on the abortion ruling and what happens next. And I look forward to talking to you more about this as it moves forward on the issue of the border.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take thanks. Care. That is the Senate President Warren Peterson for a few moments to clarify what happens where we're going to go back to the 15-week law. The Republicans are debating whether or not to put a countermeasure on the ballot that would give people other options other than the Arizona for Abortion Access proposal that will be there. So a lot to discuss and a lot to take in. We're going to talk more about these issues here in the coming days. In just a moment, our buddy Luke Lipinski joins us. We do our catch up on sports, the D-backs and others. All that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Mike talks Diamondbacks baseball. D-backs home run with Broomhead on KTAR News 92.3 and the KTAR News app.
You ever been stood up? You ever ask somebody out on a date and they say yes, and then you are waiting. You can't wait for the date. It's Friday night. You get dressed up in your best clothes, and then you get stood up on your date. They just don't show up, or they're late, or you know what I'm talking about, right, Luke?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Thanks for getting in. I know that you were running a little bit late. I just thought I'd have some fun in the meantime. No,
that's fair.
How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Obviously, our sports wrap up each week. We've talked about the D-backs a lot. Are you concerned? We keep talking about injuries and other things, but they didn't look good last night against the Dodgers. Should fans be concerned about this slow start? Last year, they didn't make a lot of the mistakes they're making this year. What should fans be thinking about this?
Yeah, I was looking at this before. They haven't won three games in a row all season, which I know it's fairly early, but it's not so early. We're almost a quarter of the way through the season, right? So, do I still think they can be a playoff team? Yeah. Do I still think they will be? Yeah, probably. But I mean, at a certain point, you need to get your players back, which I know is out of their control. And I think we saw this with the Suns. You don't just automatically flip the switch when everybody comes back. So, look, losing a game to the Dodgers are a good team, whether we want to admit it or not. But I wouldn't say it's nothing, the start they've had.
But they got hammered last night.
Yeah.
And they got hammered last night by the Dodgers. They didn't score any runs, which with this pitcher, and not a great pitcher from the Dodgers, but they gave up a lot of home runs. The ball was hit hard. They just didn't look good.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Jordan Montgomery was on the mound for the D-backs, too, and the rotation has been so just in flux with everybody being hurt, and he wasn't hurt, but he wasn't on the team early enough to pitch right out of the start. So right now, in terms of healthy pitchers, he might be your best. Zach Gallen got pushed back a few games, so it's not great to see your arguably your best pitcher get lit up.
But do they have the farm system and the other pieces to get through this patch? When they get to full strength, do you think this team is still capable of making a big run?
Yeah, no, I do. That I do believe. I mean, Corbin Carroll, I'm assuming, is not going to hit 190 all season.
Yeah.
That's very strange. And they're not going to have, you would think, this many injuries all season. So when you put them all together and you make this team whole, I mean, if you can do that within the next month or so, or at least relatively whole, I don't know that they're going to be able to catch the Dodgers if this goes on much longer, but they can still make the playoffs. And once you're in the playoffs, it doesn't really matter where you
finish.
Which
they've proved. They proved that last year.
Yeah.
Just get in.
Yeah. No, and I think that has to be the plan right now. You have to navigate the adversity they faced early this season. And it's not a good start. I'm not trying to say it is. So far, it hasn't been disastrous. You know what I mean? It's not like they're way below 500.
Don't hit the panic button.
It's still salvageable right now.
So I have to talk to you about the Suns, because I'm going to paraphrase, but I'm sure you saw the quotes from the owner, Ishbia, and was asked about the coach, was asked about the GM, asked about, and what I read was, we really haven't had the conversations. We haven't talked about the coach. We haven't talked about the GM. Everybody's done some good things. I think I've done some good things, but we're still assessing. If I'm Vogel, that's not the kind of ringing endorsement of we have the full confidence in the coach. It's like, we haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because that's kind of how I took it too. And a lot of people are taking it as, oh, they're just going to do the exact same thing next year. And it's, I sort of took that as, hey, this, we are at least looking at this. We haven't talked to everybody yet. You know, they might very well bring him back. A lot of the press conference seemed to suggest that Matt Ishbia and James Jones want some continuity that they haven't really had in the past. But I'm with you. They left the door open a little bit.
Yeah, it would seem to me, again, I can't put words in his mouth, but it would be, listen, this is a great coach. He's been to the finals before. We've got a good team. We didn't do it this year. But you're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And we're looking at this. We're going to make some changes during the season, but we think we have the major pieces to make a big run, and he's a big part of that, is what you'd want to hear him say.
Yeah, I couldn't tell how much he was just trying to be positive, because Matt Ishbia is kind of a positive guy, and you don't want to convey panic, right? I mean, in any business, and he's been very successful in business, or how much of it is just simply, they really can't make a lot of changes, so if they're going to make a change, it might have to be Frank Vogel.
All right, so before I let you go, give me a letter grade of the Cardinals draft.
At
face value.
I would say an A, which is, it's always tough, right? We always want to be more critical of the home teams. But the fact that they got Marvin Harrison Jr., they addressed a huge need and maybe got the best player in the draft, the best one or two players, and still had 11 picks. That, in addition to that, that to me, all you can really grade is how Monty navigated the draft, and I would give him an A.
Always appreciate it. I know you were running in and you got to run out because you got a show to do yourself. But I love this segment every week.
Too,
so
man.
Thanks
this
for doing it again.
Awesome.
Thank All right. It's Luke Lipinski from the Wolf and Luke Show. All right. We are going to talk coming up in just a few moments. We will be talking about the AZ ballot breakdown.